Good afternoon. Thank you for tuning in to Meet Me at the Diner with host Ann Eller. Our special guest today is Dr. John Griffith, president of Presbyterian College. Here's your host, Ann Eller.
Oh, that's right. We have corralled Dr. John Vincent Griffith right here. He is the president of Presbyterian College, and it is so good to have him here. He's actually a native of Hamilton, New York. He, too, has found the beauty of South Carolina, and he has quite an interesting story to tell. One of the reasons I had him on the show here is they've just opened a pharmacy school over there at Presbyterian College. Wanted to hear more about that. But the more you learn, the more questions you have. So welcome to the show, Dr. Griffith.
It's good to be here.
It's good to meet you. And, you know, you certainly have bit off in a very big chunk over there at Presbyterian College.
We have a lot going on right now. You're right. We're a traditional liberal arts college that thinks of its mission, and still do, mm-hmm. as preparing students for the best graduate and professional schools in the country. And here we have a doctoral program. And it's a four-year doctoral program in pharmacy, and that's a new thing for us.
It is. That is terrific. And, of course, we're going to talk a lot more about that. But first I want to talk a little bit about you. You're a native of Hamilton, New York.
That's correct.
All right. And it says you grew up on the campus of Colgate University as the son of the institution's longtime dean of students. Was that a good thing or a bad thing?
I loved it.
You loved it?
Our house was right in the middle of the campus. I want to give people a tag for this.
Okay.
Think of a town of 2,500 people,
mm-hmm.
with a college called Colgate University with 1,800 students, 40 miles from the nearest city, surrounded by dairy farms.
Okay.
Okay. Now, think of Clinton, South Carolina.
Yes.
With 8,000 people.
Yes.
A college with 1,300 students, 40 miles from Greenville, 50 miles from Columbia, 22 miles from Greenwood.
Are you saying
I feel like I'm at home?
I knew you were going there with that. I
feel like I'm at home.
Wow. Well, that is terrific. Now, how long have you actually been at PC?
14 years.
14 years. Okay. But before that, you what did you want to be when you grew up?
I wanted to be a medical doctor. Went off to college to do that.
Okay.
And the journey was an interesting one that ended up with my doing research in my doctoral program on intellectual development of college-age students.
Okay.
And I found my passion and ended up on the research faculty at the Center for the Study of Higher Education at the University of Michigan, and then was pulled south in 79 to be vice president at Davidson College, and then from there went and did a presidency in Arkansas, and then came here 14 years ago.
That's right. You were at, what was the name of the, in Arkansas that they actually ended up changing the name, right?
Well, it was
right?
called Arkansas College. Again, a Presbyterian liberal arts college. Davidson's Presbyterian, so there's a theme
right,
for that.
Right, yes, developing.
And yes, while I was there, that the school changed its name to Lyon College. So if you go on to look in U.S. News and World Report and things
sure.
like that, it's under Lyon,
okay.
L-Y-O-N.
Why did they change their name, just out of curiosity?
Well, it had to do with identity. University of Arkansas mm-hmm. Is the Clemson or the USC of Arkansas. The oldest institution in Arkansas is Arkansas College.
Mm-hmm.
And with the name Arkansas, people often assumed that it was a branch of the state system as opposed to a highly selective liberal arts college. So it was an identity.
So Lyon, of course, means powerful and up top, on top there, right?
Well, yeah. It conjures that up, even though it's spelled L-Y-O-N,
mm-hmm.
And that was the name of the first president of the college.
Okay. So there was a lot of connections there.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Much so.
Absolutely. So I understand that you actually were the chaplain and head of the religion department at Dana Hall, which was a private boarding school in Wellesley, Massachusetts.
That's correct.
You know, I went to Northfield, right up in that area.
I know that place well.
That's right, you know. And My parents had to send me away. I was too wild a child. They thought sending me to Northfield was the answer. I'm not sure. I'm sure as a chaplain at Wellesley, you found those girls weren't as sedate as they probably should have been.
Well, that's interesting because, you know, when I finished my undergraduate, my journey took me to Harvard Divinity School. This was the young man that was going to be a physician. And when I finished that program at Harvard, I wanted a break before going to get my PhD and saw this ad for chaplain at the Dana Hall School for Girls. Well, at that point, I was 24 years old.
You thought, woohoo!
And, well, I'm, the woohoo was the experience.
Okay.
that wasn't what I was thinking. I think I blushed a lot.
Okay.
And the clientele, of course, at many of these New England boarding schools were very sophisticated young women who came from families who had lots of opportunities for their children.
Absolutely.
But it was there that notion of working with young adults during important years to transition into mature adults and careers, which education is all about.
Absolutely.
But that's where that passion developed.
And you just kept on. Well, I just found that pretty interesting since I went up there to Northfield. Now, you went on, and I understand you actually have, you came up with a copyright for the Learning Context Questionnaire that's used by educators to assess students' intellectual. Well, what's all that about?
Well, I think the way to get your arms around this is to understand developmental issues, developmental psychology, developmental biology, and the way I usually explain this is in an entirely different arena. I want to move it to the intellectual arena for a moment. Think of physical development of a child.
Mm-hmm.
And the end point is to have the world's best ballerina.
Mm-hmm.
At 2 years old, or go back maybe 12 months, what you're seeing is crawling.
Right.
And there's usually a developmental sequence, crawling or hitching before walking, walking before running, running before racing effectively, dancing effectively, and then the whole issue of being a ballerina. Now, from the developmental perspective there is that there's nothing that you could do as a dance teacher to teach that 12-month-old to be a ballerina at that point. Now, there may be some things that you can do early on to anticipate that.
Sure.
So if the body has developmental issues, the mind must have developmental issues.
Sure.
And we know that sort of obviously that it takes a while to learn 1 + 1 = 2. It takes a while longer to learn algebra. It takes a longer to learn calculus.
It takes longer to learn that you're not the center of the universe.
Well, those are also issues. So what does that say in the college years between the freshman and the senior year about intellectual development? Mm-hmm. How do we structure the way we expect students to engage knowledge to move them to the highest level possible of using knowledge? Because the end point for us is to prepare people who can really create new knowledge in medicine, in engineering, in the environmental issues, in the range of our responsibility for all that there is,
sure,
really. So understanding developmental issues of the mind, the Learning Context Questionnaire is a questionnaire that a faculty member can give students in her or his class to ascertain what level are they at so I can figure out how to target the knowledge that they need to get in a way that they can get a hold of it and begin to use it and play with it effectively.
And I suppose that you'll have students at different levels within each class.
You do. And that makes it challenging for a faculty member. But it also can be pretty exciting.
Sure.
Pretty exciting.
Now, what about when we talk about education and we talk about Chinese students? We have a lot of information that's leaving our country and going back to China. Do we think that do students learn whatever they're from, does that make a difference? Like our Chinese people that are coming here and going to school and then going back, does that make a difference?
Absolutely. I mean, I would let me come at it from a Presbyterian college perspective. We're the only liberal arts college in the country that has what's called a Confucius Institute. Mm-hmm. And this is a program funded by the Chinese government that allows us to have on our campus a really high-end experience for our students mm-hmm. to engage China and understand it.
Okay.
It also allows us to bring to our campus Chinese students for a comprehensive experience of what it means to be an American. Our government mm-hmm. has just identified us to open an American cultural center in China so that we can be doing the same thing there. Now, why is this? Why is that important?
Yeah,
well,
okay.
I think as far out as we can see, that the relationship between China mm-hmm. and the United States is largely going to determine the quality of life on Earth. And we better do this right. And
we better understand China really well. Is
yes.
that what you're saying?
I think so.
Yeah.
And I think it means, you know, when I was educated, the mantra was education is about preparing the best American citizen we can possibly prepare. The mantra that I think is out there now, the job is to prepare the best American citizen we can possibly prepare who understands how to operate globally. It's not just China. It's India.
Sure.
It's South America. It's Europe. So we spend a lot more time in that focus with all of our programs.
That's very interesting. That's very interesting. I didn't realize. I knew you had the Confucius, but I didn't know. So when will that actually be opening in China?
We just got that grant.
Okay.
And that, in fact, this is the first time that it's being talked about publicly on this broadcast. The money has been sent, and I'll be going over in December mm-hmm. to sign the papers and hopefully be part of the ceremony for inaugurating the opening of that particular center.
Now, where will that actually be?
It'll be in Guiyang, which is the capital city of Guizhou province. And what's interesting about this is that this province has the highest concentration of ethnic minorities in China. And the Chinese government has identified that part of China as the next focus for the Chinese economic miracle.
That's interesting, the Chinese miracle.
Well, that's how they, and when you go there, it sort of is. It reminds me of what happened in Chicago in the late 1890s. All of a sudden, cities are just being transformed.
Mm-hmm.
And while they don't use the word capitalism, what is occurring mm-hmm. Is the opportunity for people to develop business, and it's a form of capitalism under a restrictive government that really doesn't have a name for it yet. And generating a great deal of revenue.
Wow, this could be huge.
Yeah.
Yes, this could be huge.
And I'm proud of the fact that we're at the center of helping China understand what America's doing, mm-hmm. and that we have an entity here that is helping Americans understand what China's doing. We're funding through our Confucius Institute. Chinese language programs at two schools in Greenville, at schools in Spartanburg. There would be an opportunity to do it here in Greenwood if there was a school system interested. You know, access to people is often through their language.
Absolutely. Well, that's pretty darn big here today, right here on Meet Me at the Diner, right here in Greenwood.
There we go.
There we go. Hey, let's hear a word from our sponsors. We'll be right back. Don't you go away.
Gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
You're tuned in to Meet Me at the Diner. Your host, Ann Ella. Our special guest is Dr. John Griffith, president of the Presbyterian College. Here's your host, Ann Eller.
Oh, that's right. We are right back here at Shark Facets Gallery. We've been having a fascinating conversation about the exchange that's going on between the Confucius Center that is right here at Presbyterian. He just announced on the radio that they are going to be having a center over
called
in China.
Called American Cultural Center.
American Cultural Center, which is, I guess, for the Chinese to learn about American culture.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
This is a new program of the U.S. State Department.
U.S. State Department. Wow. So this is going to be a huge program over there. You're going to be going over there in December. But you just told me you have the largest Confucius statue.
Well, I think we should think of it as one of the seven wonders of the world.
Seven wonders of the world, John.
In America,
okay.
And in Clinton, South Carolina.
Okay.
This came as a gift from the president of our partner institution in China. And it's a magnificent statue of Confucius. And, yes, it is the largest, at least in North America.
In North America, okay. That's pretty neat. I had no idea. You were telling me that how having this Confucius Center has certainly changed the makeup of the college over there. You have students from all nationalities there now.
That's correct. A fun way of gauging that is just to walk into the dining center and just to see. Clearly, this is still a predominantly Caucasian campus.
Mm-hmm.
But to see how people sit and to see the groupings, we work very hard for a person to leave PC. I like to use the phrase being able to dance across the global stage and feel comfortable in a wide range of settings.
Well, you know, they say that the world is now, it's becoming smaller. We are all in this together, and particularly as we look at the economies out there and what's happening on in the world. But one of my questions would be, how do you feel with you were just telling me that China is becoming so big and so powerful. How are we as Americans going to deal with China, and do you think we have anything to be concerned about?
We're clearly the strongest nation in the world in terms of our economy, even though we're having a difficult time, in terms of our diplomacy, in terms of our role as peacekeepers. And that's the America that we know, and that for people in my generation and yours have grown up with that as our role.
Mm-hmm.
I think our values and our notion of sort of world justice are important notions. We have a country with the largest population. More people speak Chinese than any other language in the world now.
Mm-hmm.
And with economy...
Wait a minute. You said more people speak Chinese than any other in the world?
Mm-hmm.
What happened to English?
Well, as a second language...
Yes.
Virtually every Chinese also knows English, but I'm talking about as your first language,
right?
With 3 billion,
people.
Soon to be 4 billion people. It goes back to a notion I said earlier, an economy there now that is either second to ours or just behind the whole European group. And, of course, the European group is in trouble right
Absolutely.
Now.
Absolutely.
We know Europe well.
Right.
We don't know China well in terms of our entire education system.
Mm-hmm.
And this isn't an alarm. This isn't a threat. I think we, as educated people and as people responsible for what's coming,
mm-hmm.
education is about...
The future.
Preserving the best of the past so that you help the future become.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in order to do that, it's not only our European heritage, but we've got to understand the Pacific Rim and Asia and what's happening there. So that's really our commitment. That's why we're doing this.
Well, I think that's terrific. I just wanted to have a little more conversation about it. But PC is not only on the international scene, but you also are changing divisions on your sports.
That's correct.
What are you doing there?
We're in transition from NCAA Division One to NCAA Division Two to NCAA Division One, and then I'm going to say a phrase: FCS. Football Championship Series. That's a level of Division I that isn't in football the same as Clemson or USC.
Okay.
But it is the same as Furman and Wofford and Coastal Carolina, et cetera. In all other sports, it is at the same level as those institutions. And so we're in our last year of transition. And beginning next year, even though we're now playing all Division I schools, next year we'll be able to compete in postseason play. And for coaches and for student athletes, that's very
huge.
Important. Yeah,
yeah,
important
that's huge.
To them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that's going to be exciting. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about sports. I think we're going to get into the pharmacy school, and who knows what else we'll be talking about here with Dr. John Griffith from Presbyterian College, the president of Presbyterian. Don't you go away. It's time for us to hear South Carolina news and a word from our sponsors. We'll be right back.
What does WLMA stand for? Well, it stands for Wow, Let's Meet Again, right here on 1350 AM, Greenwood and the Lakelands News Talk Radio Station.
Welcome back to Meet Me at the Diner with host Ann Ella. Our special guest is Dr. John Griffith, the president of Presbyterian College. Live from Sharpass's Gallery, here's your host, Ann Eller.
Oh, that's right. We are back here. We've been talking about the Confucius Center. We've been talking about the new center that's going to be over there in China. We've been talking about a lot of things here with Dr. John Griffith from Presbyterian College. And just before we went to hear the news, we were talking a little bit about the change in football, their level with the NCAA. And you told me you're going from a level 2 to a level 1, but it's not on the same level as Carolina and Clemson, but it is, as well as Furman and some of the other schools. Is that right?
Yeah. Just a slight clarification there. It's only in football that it's not at the same level. In all other sports, men's and women's basketball, softball, soccer, women's lacrosse, it's the same level. Division I's the same at all institutions that play Division I. Football has two levels.
Okay.
The Bowl Championship Series.
Right.
And the Football Championship Series. And the Bowl Championship Series is what Auburn football, Alabama, Clemson,
Carolina,
USA, et cetera.
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
So, and that's more a more costly level.
Sure. So why did you decide to make the change, though? I mean, that's got to be, that's stepping it up here.
Well, that's an interesting question, and one not without controversy.
Okay.
I think in part it has to do with this part of the country. Where I grew up in New England, a school like us with high academic standards would most likely be playing Division III sports, like Williams and Amherst and Swarthmore.
Right. But now we're in the South.
In this part of the country, the strong, small academic institutions, Davidson, Furman, Wofford, PC, play Division I.
Okay.
Why do they do that? Well, I can remember arriving at Davidson in 1979 as a vice president and wondering that. And I hope this isn't insulting to anyone. I do think it's part of the notion of what excellence is all about. The Rhodes Scholarship notion that the talented, ambitious person wants excellence at the highest level of competition possible in the classroom, on the playing field, in terms of leadership opportunities, and in terms of service opportunities to their community. And those happen to be central core values for us.
At Presbyterian.
And our traditional rivals in athletics, when you look at the 100th anniversary of football at PC, will be in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
We have played in that period of time Wofford 82 times.
Okay.
And when you look at Davidson and you look at Furman, it's virtually the same number.
Okay.
And so those are the schools that have been central to our alumni's identity as in terms of who are we?
Right.
You know, who are we? So I think that's part of it. And when you look at the overlap of our applications for freshmen, that's where the overlaps are. That's the universe in which we're competing for students.
So, and but this gives them more opportunity in the football to be able to move up that level, correct?
Yes, yeah. It's a tough journey, and being successful at this level is more demanding. But it's exciting to see, it's interesting to see that the average, the grade point average of our athletic teams is virtually the same as the student body as a whole. The four-year retention rate is slightly higher for our intercollegiate athletes. And so we feel like it's working. We feel that that notion of the well-rounded drive for excellence in the classroom, playing field, service, leadership, can be supported by the data of what's actually happening.
Wow. Well, that's good luck.
Thank
well,
you.
We'll hope to hear more about Presbyterian on the football field here now.
And learn what it means to be a blue hose. That's our mascot.
The
that's
blue
an
hose.
Interesting. The blue hose.
What is the blue hose? I'm not familiar with that one.
Well, think of the movie Braveheart.
Yes.
And those hardcore Presbyterians that resisted British rule at all cost.
Yes.
Were called blue stockings.
Yes.
And the Victorian Women Intellectuals Reading Society, the members of that group in London were called Blue Stockings. We were actually the Blue Stockings at one point, but it's really hard to cheer Go Stockings. You know, just
well, you know, was that a division of the Black Stocking Baptists?
Well,
I mean, because you do.
I understand.
Right,
I understand. Yeah,
absolutely.
But that comes out of our history. Why it was.
What does your mascot look like, then?
It's a Scotsman.
A Scotsman, okay.
Yeah,
I was thinking of a hose.
No, but he wears blue hose.
He wears blue hose.
Some might wonder why, when it was changed, it wasn't changed to blue socks.
Right. It might wonder, yes.
It's a little easier to cheer that.
Well, you know, I have been by Presbyterian on game afternoon and seen all the people tailgating out there. Quite a spectacle, and
it
you
is.
Do have a fabulous field out there,
well,
I might add,
you.
Too. Yeah, really,
thank
really
you.
Nice over there. All right. Well, we are here at Sharp Facets Gallery. We are talking to Dr. John Griffiths, who is the president over there. He came on here because we were going to talk about pharmacy, their new pharmacy school that they opened in 2010, correct?
Yep.
Yes.
Right.
And, of course, so you've got really 1 year under your belt going on the second year. What brought a pharmacy school to Presbyterian College?
You know, institutions have strategic plans that talk about what their priorities are going to be going forward. Pharmacy was not in our strategic plan.
So it was a diversion in the road.
This came to us, yes.
Okay.
And it came to us from pharmacy educators in the Southeast. I think they went to some other schools like us in the region. It's not proper for me to
right.
share that information. They came to us, and I know they came to us because of how our students had performed in those doctoral programs,
okay.
graduating from PC with a major in biology or chemistry or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
And we said no, that was not in our mission set.
You said no?
We did.
Okay.
And then we had two other things happen. We had an alum of both PC and of the pharmacy school say, if I funded the feasibility study to see if it was feasible, would you look at this? And we said no.
You said no again. Playing hard to get, huh,
John? We were. And then that same week, the Presbyterian Homes of South Carolina called us to say that they were going to close Frampton Hall in downtown Clinton, which was a retirement community.
Mm-hmm.
Older people in the listening audience might remember that as the Mary Musgrove Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And so when those three things happened in a short period of time, I convened the executive committee of our board and said, is this something we want to look at? And we opened that door, and here we are. We have a pharmacy school. And I'm very, very glad we have it.
Now, as far as pharmacy schools in South Carolina, there is one at Clemson and one at USC?
No,
you know?
There's one at USC and one at MUSC that actually are combined and have one central administration, but two locations. And that's a very strong school of pharmacy.
Okay, so this is the only other school.
In the upstate.
In the upstate.
Yeah.
Well, listen, when we come back, we're going to be talking more about the pharmacy school over there at Presbyterian College, so don't you go away. If you happen to have a question, don't hesitate to give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984. We'll be right back. These days are on.
This year will be a simpler year, one fine gift to last a lifetime from Mother Earth with love, a diamond to light the way and create the energy to keep your love alive. Only at Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72 Greenwood, 229-6276.
You're with us at Meet Me at the Diner with host Ann Eller. Our special guest today is Dr. John Griffith, president of the Presbyterian College. Here's your host, Ann Eller.
Oh, that's right. We are back here. We are talking to Dr. John Vincent Griffith. I tell you what, he is full of news here today right here on WLMA. And, of course, their pharmacy school opened last year for the fall season. Not a turn that he thought he was going to take with the college, but guess what? That's what turns are all about, right?
That's right.
And it's been a good thing for Presbyterian.
There's no question that it's opened our horizons in interesting ways, has brought a remarkable group of people to our community, faculty who are teaching at the doctoral level, coming from the major universities across the country and coming to South Carolina and to Clinton. That's good.
Absolutely, it's good. You know, I think one of the things that has to be exciting for you is it is a job market that there is going to be a need for many years, because as our population ages, I think I was reading here, recent reports predict that by 2030 there will be 40,000 shortfall of pharmacists. If I was looking for a career, I think I'd have to look at that one.
Well, you've said that well. And furthermore, each state in the nation has a score on a 1 to 5 scale, where a 5 means it's really hard to find a pharmacist and we're in desperate situations.
Sure.
Well, we understand what's happening in our part of the country with the influx of retirees and also the natural aging of our own population. So North and South Carolina, Georgia, Tennessee, Florida have some of the highest scores for that need.
Yeah, I read another one. 7 billion prescriptions will be filled in 2020. Now that's frightening. Does that mean we're all going to be on drugs?
Oh gosh, I hope not. But you know, in terms of your own life,
sure.
If you're a healthy person, you know, you may be taking aspirins when you're a child, but at some point it becomes maybe high blood pressure and then maybe some other things. And what the average older person is taking, and is, depending on the age, goes from 4 pills to 7 pills to 9 pills. And being able to manage those effectively. The education for pharmacists is something that I had no idea about. As I told you earlier, I could tell you how to set up a chemistry department or an English department. This was a new day for us.
Sure.
The education of a pharmacist, I thought, had to do with pill counting. It's absolutely remarkable. It sort of blends with the notion of the nurse practitioner, the person that understands fully what should be prescribed, what the interaction with the medicines.
Probably one of the biggest things is the interaction of medications. That
Absolutely.
Is the scary thing.
And so often the pharmacist is the one, you know, a patient may be going to multiple doctors for good reason.
Sure.
But it's only with the pharmacist sees
all these medications
that's being taken
together.
And what problems there could be.
So that has to be an excellent career. Now, what sets what you're doing over there at PC separate in the pharmacy department, particularly apart from what other schools are doing with pharmacy?
Well, Well, I think a couple of things. First, I would tie it to the college's motto, Dum vivimus servimus, while we live, we serve. And so the notion of serving communities is central at the undergraduate level and was a charge that we gave the pharmacy school. That means that interwoven throughout the curriculum is the idea that we're here to serve communities in the surrounding area.
Mm-hmm.
One of the first things we did was to enter into a contractual arrangement with the free clinics of South Carolina. And in stepwise fashion, being the distributor of the medications for people in free clinics.
Sure.
And to give our students firsthand experience with that. Secondly, related to the faculty expertise and special emphases within the curriculum, the healthcare issues of our part of the country. Bringing from the University of Georgia a faculty member who's the leading expert on the management of diabetes,
mm-hmm.
certainly an issue here.
Sure.
Similarly, building expertise related to hypertension issues, and third, issues of obesity, so that in addition to all the other things that pharmacists need to know, having a particular expertise in those things that our citizens face.
And that's something that we're not only facing in the Southeast, but we're facing across our nation.
Of course. It's going to be applicable in any area, but the percentage of those things occurring here is at a higher rate than in other areas. And in certain populations of people,
mm-hmm.
those things occur more highly.
Okay, sure.
We were so excited. You know, this is a four-year doctoral program, and so we're only in the second year. There are about 120 pharmacy schools in the nation, and each year they give an award to, it's called the Service Award.
Okay.
The pharmacy school that's making the biggest difference.
Right.
In terms of its curriculum as it prepares students to make it, to serve. Well, we learned
three weeks ago
that we're one of the two finalists.
What's the other school?
Well, we don't know that.
You don't know that?
But
oh.
We're having a site visit in October.
Wow.
And the announcement will be made in November. And in a sense, we feel like we've already won because we're the new
kid on the block.
The street.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
The new drug dealer on the street.
There you go.
Wow. Well, that's pretty amazing.
So.
And what's the name of that award that you could win here, one of two?
It has a very long name in front of it that I don't have with me, but
it's
the National Service Award given to a pharmacy school each year.
Wow, that's pretty terrific.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm very proud of our faculty for taking seriously that charge of Dum vivimus servimus. This needs to be a program about turning out people who serve.
Well, it's looking at all aspects. You know, I think there was a time in education where our kids came out looking for how much money they were going to make.
Right.
And with what's happened with the economy and everything, that certainly has changed a lot of the mm-hmm. philosophy and what we're thinking about, you know. And I don't think the schools are as confident, too, that they're going to turn them out to get the big dollar jobs anymore. So we're having to look at the total human picture. And I think that's a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, you've a number of important things that you've said in that. Let me talk first about pharmacy. One of the reasons pharmacy is so attractive right now is that there are lots of jobs,
mm-hmm.
and you can find a job any place you want to land,
sure.
and it's also a job very attractive for people who need to stop out for a period of time to have a family,
mm-hmm.
and then go back to work. And you know, for example, if for a new school, we had 800 applicants for 80 spots, and filling those was not an issue. And we anticipate that it's not going to be a problem placing those. Now, your point is that the economy is such that it's harder to find jobs. What does that mean for all the other students looking at different fields? Well, it's still relatively easy to find healthcare positions, but that requires going to graduate school, medical school, nursing school, what have you. And those service functions, those healthcare functions, are available. But what we're seeing as a result of not as many jobs available, that more students going immediately on to graduate school to get that master's, to get that doctoral degree. But those schools are getting more difficult to get into because that's happening across the landscape. So they have larger numbers, just like our pharmacy school had larger numbers of applicants.
But I think the fact that you're putting the service aspect into it makes for a more well-rounded person. And if I am, as an employer, am looking at a person, I want to see the person that's been involved in the community as well as being qualified for the job.
Well, thank you for saying that. You know, when you look at our undergraduate curriculum, we have an expectation that every student graduate with an intercultural or international experience. And that's something we talked about earlier in the importance of having a global perspective. We also have this, without it being required, this almost, I don't want to say pressure, a cultural norm that you're going to be involved in service while you're here. Faculty, you're going to be involved in service. Administrators, you're going to be involved in service. And we need to demonstrate.
Is it kind of like the Army?
Well, it's not a boot camp in service. No. Freely chosen.
Freely chosen.
But you would be surprised just to see that. And to hear alums talk about that is one of the defining characteristics of the place.
Well, I think you have put a lot of elements together. I know you're still working on the future. You have a long-game plan here. The pharmacy school was something you didn't exactly plan on, but it certainly has been a nice addition, and I know that it's going to serve you very, very well. As we close out here, we've talked about a lot of different issues here. Is there anything else you'd like to tell us about PC?
I think the element that distinguishes us, and this will sound perhaps trite, I love our students. They are some of the nicest young people I know. I think it's because of the strength of something we didn't talk about, the honor system, which is student-run, and students have the ability to remove students from school for cheating, for misconduct. So there's a very strong culture of responsibility, and when you combine that with demanding academics and this notion of service, those are people I would choose to be with and spend time with and want to work to make communities better with. Feels good.
Well, you know, and it shows in the way you talk about your school there. It has been so nice to sit down with you here today, Dr. Griffith from Presbyterian College, president of the college. Thanks so much for coming out today.
Thank you. This has been very enjoyable.
Well, thank you. This is, you know, your favorite radio station. We'll be posting a podcast of this, and I think we'll even have a video, folks. So check that out. We'll be posting that on WLMA.net. Hey, if you've got gold, come see us right here at Sharp Facets Gallery. You know the price of gold is, staying around $16.50, I do believe. But come see us today. This is WLMA right here in Greenwood. Bye-bye, everybody.